There's still time to save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Create stunning patios and strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast with our easy-to-use design and buy program in-store or on Menards.com. Don't miss out. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards. Save big money at
Menards. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First. It is Valentine's Day, 2023, February the 14th. I'm Ryan Ballinger. Good to have you here with us. We've got a couple things to talk about. As the name of the show implies, we are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. Hopefully, you're enjoying the show, whether you're listening on a podcast or on Golf News Net Radio, through our YouTube channels, on our website, or for our friends in other places like Sentu News and CMC Sports. A lot of different ways to catch the show. A lot of different things to talk about. We've got a big week ahead. We've got the Genesis Invitational. We've got Tiger Woods that was kind of unexpectedly announced to be a part of this field. 130 players right now for this week's event. Started, I believe, at 134. Kind of crept down to 130 with some withdrawals. There's no replacement in this Invitational event. All of the FedEx Cup 125 players that qualified for the playoffs last year and were eligible to compete in the playoffs were invited to this event, which is a little bit more than the standard 120 players that this event and the Arnold Palmer Invitational and the Memorial Tournament have become in recent years. So we've got a little bit of an oversized field relative to those standards, but we've got a jammed field for the entire week. So you've got 40 of the top 50 players in the world. We just mentioned you got Tiger Woods. That is a big deal, whether he is a ceremonial golfer or a contender or not. And out of the eligible top 100, I believe it's like one golfer that isn't in the eligible top one, is an eligible top 100 that's not competing this week. We've got an amazing field here, and Riviera is by far the best golf course on the PGA Tour that is not Augusta National. I would argue it's in many ways as good as Augusta National, and you can fight me all day about that if you wish. But if you want to take outside the majors, and obviously there's only one course every year that holds a single major. But if you took all the other courses on the PGA Tour, they play year to year, and you said to the players, tell us which one is your favorite, I think you would get Riviera as probably the winner more often than not. It would definitely get a plurality. And I think you would get some players that said TPC Sawgrass, the stadium course. You might get some other answers, but Riv wins. Riv is incredible. Had the good fortune of playing it just before the pandemic a few years ago, about a handful of years ago now. And it is everything that it looks like on TV. It is better than what it is on TV. It, even from the tips, at 7,400 yards, it isn't that long of a golf course. The punishment is really off the tee. You have to be able to hit good tee shots, the smart places to be able to play this golf course. The greens are actually quite large. The putting surfaces are huge relative to PGA Tour or even golf standards, but it is very difficult to hit and hold greens here. The Kikuyu grass is sticky. It twists your club. It grows on the ground, not up as much. It makes it very difficult to play good golf shots from the thicker stuff. This is a full examination of golf. This is not a place where you can fake it. It's not a place where you can be really good at one thing and succeed. You need to be a complete golfer who can do everything very well. And for that reason, I love this tournament very much. Doesn't get the fame, doesn't get the kind of same rub that you might expect this tournament to get because Tiger Woods is involved, and certainly compared to Phoenix last week because of the number of people who attend. But man, it's a great tournament, and we're going to have a great week enjoying it. So, that all said, I wanted to kind of jump into something from the Super Bowl, actually, and it's a couple of days late, perhaps, but it's still an interesting subject because the grass, the playing surface in Glendale, Arizona, was obviously a big topic of the Super Bowl, right? There were a lot of players slipping, a lot of just kind of awkward running and stances and transitions. And as a football game, it was very entertaining, but to watch it back or to kind of watch replays of certain portions of the game, you could tell players were struggling out there. And unfortunately for the USGA, they got caught in all of this because before the game, they have been celebrating, and there have been some articles talking about their involvement in helping develop the strain of grass that was being used at the Super Bowl in Glendale, which has struggled to identify the proper grass that they could use for a true turf surface for that NFL stadium for years. It's always been a subject there. And so they've been trying to come up with something, and they came across this thing called Tahoma 31. And it's a special blend of grass that allows basically a facility to use two different types of grass kind of at once. And those two types of grasses are Bermuda grass and rye grass. And so the idea was that Tahoma was really more of a Bermuda grass, and a Bermuda grass kind of like a Cuya, so we'll bring it back to Riv in a little bit, but it's a grass that grows, creeps, it creeps out. Doesn't grow up in the same way that a rye grass does, which is why when you talk about Bermuda grass being overseeded, you think about it as either seeded with like a bluegrass or a bent grass or a rye grass, because those grasses grow up. And so they sprout out up and through all of the porous portions, and it looks great. And that's what happens with the Masters Tournament. You get the overseed, it comes in, it's incredible, very green. But that's not necessarily true for Bermuda. So what the Tahoma 31 is supposed to do is provide a base layer through which you can overseed rye. And then the rye kind of grows through that base layer, and the surface can perform well. Well, unfortunately, that surface didn't perform very well. And for the folks who are watching the telecast, you probably heard at some point some theory from, I can't remember if it was Kevin Burkhardt or Greg Olson or someone else with the Fox crew, but they were talking about the paint on the field potentially causing slippage and being the reason why the players were having a hard time getting their footing. Well, enter then folks from Oklahoma and Oklahoma State University, which had a hand in developing this grass, their turf grass program, I believe, and they explained that the real issue isn't necessarily that it's the grass, it's the way that the grass was not only created, but also then grown. And on this field surface in particular, it seems like they overseeded the rye too much. So you had competing grasses, and the reality was that these grasses were obviously going to be grown pretty quickly for this field. And so the amount of time and the amount of water that it probably took to grow them was too much. So you put too much water on them, you made them too slick, which tends to happen with ryegrass, actually, because we have ryegrass here at our club in the DC area, and we actually may be transitioning to Bermuda next year. But the thing about ryegrass is that when it gets wet, it holds on to that moisture on the outside for a long time, and it can do that with morning dew a whole lot as well, and it can create a slippery surface. So that's what happens sometimes. I'll play earlier in the day or just after a storm, and I will slip a little bit more than I normally would, not only because it's wet, but because of the way ryegrass holds moisture and presents moisture. So if it's too wet, it becomes much slicker compared to maybe another type of grass, particularly if you thought about Bermuda, where it would kind of go down to the bottom, to the base level, and then at that base level, the water just kind of exists and goes underground, and that's the way the plant, the Bermuda grass, feeds. So at the end of the day, you've got a grass situation that probably was well-intentioned. I'm sure it was well-intentioned. But the delivery, the execution of growing that grass and presenting it for the biggest game in American sport, unfortunately did not go as well. And meanwhile, the USGA is getting pummeled for all this. Like, they had anything to do with it. Like, they helped seed the money that helped develop the grass. They made investments in turf grass. They do this all the time. The USGA works constantly to help develop turf grass that is more environmentally efficient, takes less water, grows in more places, is more helpful for different purposes and different reasons. So tee-specific strains, green-specific strains, fairway-specific strains, rough-specific strains. They've got all of those different types of things going through their agronomy programs, their turf grass programs, and they're run by really high-caliber, great people. It just so happens that in this situation, whoever implemented this grass maybe didn't do the best job with it, got caught, and all of a sudden the blowback comes their way, which is really unfortunate because the USGA doesn't deserve it. They did a good job here. They're constantly coming up with cool strains of grass. Things are changing very, very quickly in the world of grass. And I know that's not maybe the sexiest topic with which to start a show, but for a golf geek like myself who loves this kind of thing, it is very interesting to see people who maybe don't understand how turf grass works, then all of a sudden blow up about it, then get a proper explanation, and then still be mad about it. So hopefully that will help if you were a football fan, if you're an Eagles fan and dejected, if you're a Chiefs fan and really happy understanding what happened and the turf grass situation in the Super Bowl. Now, we're going to transition to the second story, which is something we've kind of been compiling over the last few days. It's kind of a couple of things together, but really want to talk about where Liv is right now, because we have two weeks, 10 days, whatever it is, until the first Liv event, which is at Mayakoba. And Mayakoba, as everyone knows, used to be a PGA Tour venue. And that venue is going to host this first event of 48 players, 12 teams, same 12 teams, same four players for each team all throughout this 14-event season. And they're launching it at a time and at a place where it doesn't really seem to generate a whole lot of buzz, because you're coming off of last week's Phoenix Open, which was tremendous and wonderful. You're coming off of RIV this week, another designated event. You're getting to the Arnold Palmer Invitational, so you're kind of in a little lull in the schedule. And then you're leading into the whole month of March and April. I mean, those 2 months combined are huge with designated tournaments and obviously the first men's major of the year. So they had to find a spot in the schedule, I guess, to be relevant, but you're doing it at a time when there's just so much going on. And I think that's really interesting, doing it at Mayakoba, a place that really doesn't attract a whole lot of fans. And between the starting event at Mayakoba and the ending event in, again, in King Abdullah Economic City in Jeddah, as they call it, Saudi Arabia, you're going to have bookend events with really awful attendance. And you saw it from the Saudi International. It's not like there are tons of people flying into Jeddah to come and watch the Saudi International. That was never the point, but they're definitely not there now, and you're trying to make this comparison to the PGA Tour as a product, where you're trying to say, if we're Liv, hey, we are more fun, we have something different, we have teams and captains and personalities and franchises and all those things, and we're going to really lean hard into that. But at the same time, oh, by the way, we have more fun. You know, it's more fun out here because we're not taking it so seriously. It is 54 holes. They're kind of leaning into the criticisms about it, which I think you kind of have to do at this point, right? You have to acknowledge that we're not playing traditional style golf. We're doing something different. And if you like that, then you should like Liv. Forget any other issues you might have with the funding source or who's playing or who's the CEO or whatever. And that's fine. But you're presenting this product initially in a place where you're just not going to have much buzz. I mean, people in Playa del Carmen, they're there on their honeymoons or spring breaks. I mean, they're going to resorts where you have unlimited drink packages. No kids are allowed. And people are going to get crazy at these places. They're not leaving the campuses of their resorts to go watch a golf tournament. I don't care where you're from, whether you're from the U.S. or you're a Canadian snowbird or you're from Europe. That's not it. That's not why you're at that destination. So I don't think they're going to get tons and tons of people there. I mean, they'll get some, right? But relative to even a PGA Tour event, which never really attracted a whole ton of people, and you're going to open up with that, and that's going to be your introduction to an American television audience through the CW, whatever you think of that, but that's going to be your introduction. And I think they're missing something here, but they're trying to make up for it desperately with a lack of buzz, probably that tournament week, with trying to create some buzz leading into the season. So they are going to, over the next 3 days, release, 16 of their players and the four teams that those four players represent per team over the next 3 days. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So I'm sure there will be some folks that we know that are leaving, right? We know Joaquin Niemann's gone. He left last year. We know he's now a captain. We know Mito Pereira has left. He's already been talking about how great an opportunity Liv is in the international series events. We know Sebastian Munoz is out the door. Is there anybody else? Who is that? Will we find out? Will we find out this week? Because obviously, will any of the players who are competing this week at Riviera walk away from the PGA Tour after this week by being introduced by Liv? Obviously, that's one of those shocker moments. And this tournament was a fulcrum last year for the development of Liv, where you had all of these players coming out at once because of Phil Mickelson's scary MFers comments. And all of them kind of saying, well, the PGA Tour is where it's at. Now I'm here to be at the PGA Tour. And obviously, that turned out to not be true, because the players made what turned out to be kind of, I guess, semi-coerced statements. And they probably did so at a time where they thought this whole Liv thing's never going to get off the ground. It's just not going to work out. So I'm going to stay loyal to the PGA Tour insofar as I need to be loyal to them, make public statements about it, and then we'll see what happens. And obviously, things did happen. Liv did happen. Dustin Johnson went away. Bryson went away. Brooks went away. Phil went away. Go down the line of people who left in that initial group of people who left. So will you have something similar this year where Tiger's tournament turns out to be one of those weird weeks where, yes, the golf is great on the course, but there's a lot of intrigue about who's walking away from the PGA Tour. I don't get the sense about that, but I don't know. I mean, I don't work at Liv, so I don't have the answers there. But I think that's one thing to think about this week as they're trying to announce these teams, these 12 different teams. Now, they've tried to position these captains as people that you can get behind because you like their franchise or you like what they represent or what they've accomplished. And to a degree, they have some character, right? I mean, it may be forced, but there are some. And so they're trying to lean into that really heavily about a campaign called 12 Teams You Choose or something like that. Like, you get your choice of which team to back, trying to create, I guess, rivalry, so to speak. And I just, look, I'm a golf geek, right? I love golf, love playing golf. I've played golf for, gosh, almost 28 years now. And I recognize I'm not a cool guy. I'm just not. I might be a nice guy, but I'm not a cool guy. And as I tweeted, I don't think there are a lot of people in golf that, at least the professional level, that are cool people. Like, if you saw them walking down the street, you'd be like, that person's cool right there. And that doesn't mean that they're bad. That doesn't mean that they're not interesting. But trying to make golf a sport about being what's cool, what's mainstream cool, is very difficult. Extremely difficult. There's a certain type of person that plays golf, and they tend to be wealthier. It's not universally true. Tend to be wealthier. They tend to like social interaction, but they also tend to be a little bit, maybe they weren't as popular when they were younger. And that's not universally true, of course. But I don't get the sense that you can easily just go and make golf cool because you say it is, or because you have 12 professional golfers who want you to think that rooting for a team in particular because it exists is cool. It's hard to do. And I think for Liv, they're doing competing things. They're holding events at places where you're just not going to generate that much buzz. And at the same time, you're trying to convince everybody that this is something to get behind, even though you're not going to have a whole lot of buzz. That doesn't add up to me. And I think there's going to be some trickiness about that here in the next couple of weeks. Again, we'll see, but it confuses me because I'm trying to figure out where you're trying to go with this. And I think at the end of the day, they're trying to go lean into all of the criticism about the product, not the funding source, but about the product, that it is 54 holes, that it is team-based, that it is a shotgun start, that it's not traditional tournament formatting and scheduling, all of those things, and they're hoping that will pay off for them. We shall see. But at the same time, you've got this week a couple of things that also kind of lead into questions again or criticism about the funding source for Liv, which isn't going to go away. That's not changing. But this week you've got the Saudi Ladies International, which is sponsored by Aramco. And we'll get back to Aramco in a second. But you've got that going on in the same place at Royal Greens Golf and Country Club where they had the Saudi International a couple weeks ago. And they have a small field. I think it's 72 players, if I remember right, that are going to compete in a no-cut event for a $5 million purse. You've got a lot of top names competing. You've got Italia Tivikal. You've got Lydia Ko. I believe Lexi Thompson's in it. Number of players that are LPGA star names that are going to be competing in this tournament. And you're probably not going to hear a lot of the same criticism that's levied at the men for playing in the Saudi International or for playing in Liv. But we've talked about this before. This funding source is a potentially larger problem for women's golf than it is for men's golf at the professional level. And I'm very curious what the reaction to all of that will be as you've got these Liv teams being unveiled. And it's all kind of in the same pot of money, of course. So are people going to focus on the Liv teams, or are they going to focus on the Saudis funding a $5 million tournament on the Ladies European Tour where the average purse is like 400,000 euros? I don't know. And I don't think that's purposeful, by the way. I just think it's an interesting backdrop to see what happens over the next several days. And one other thing I want to add to that is that Anna Nordqvist is a player who has taken a lot of criticism for her sponsorship, taking on an ambassadorial role with Aramco, wearing their logo on her hat and clothing, wearing the Golf Saudi logo on her clothing. And she said she has ended her ambassador deal with Aramco. She said, it didn't really turn out the way I thought it would. I need to think about myself, and I haven't felt good about this. I wasn't really prepared to get such an incredible amount of hatred and mean comments from people who don't even know me, end quote. And so I think some of this criticism might be taking a toll on some players, and it might take a toll not only on players like Anna Nordqvist, who's a three-time major winner, who is a very thoughtful person. At least I've heard that she's thoughtful over the years. I've seen it in interviews, but don't know her personally, of course. And I wonder if there's any kind of spillover effect to other players who may be feeling a similar level of criticism, whether they're involved in LIV or they're playing this week in Jeddah on the Ladies European Tour, whatever that looks like. Is that criticism growing to a point that's going to affect some players who are just going to say, you know what, I don't want to deal with this. And I don't want to take the accusations on from people who can get a hold of me through any which method, social media wise, that are going to accuse me of being a bad person. And so Nordqvist, I mean, she's 35. She signed this ambassador role last year. And she said she thought it would be a good opportunity to promote women's golf. So, quote, it was never about money for me. I wanted to do something for the ladies golf and especially for the European Tour, Ladies European Tour. I need to get in 4 tournaments on the Ladies European Tour before August because my big goal is to play in the Solheim Cup. I feel it's important to play all over the world to influence younger generations to dream big, end quote. And so she's, at the same time, she's got a Solheim Cup to qualify for this year. So she's got to play some of the schedule. You've got an LPGA schedule to manage. Maybe she figured this would help her out a little bit and kind of maybe ease the dollar values of having to go play Ladies European Tour events. And that's fine, but I think the blowback from all of that was more than she expected. And I wonder, in private, if LIV players feel the same way. Because if you read comments on Twitter or Instagram, a lot of comments are made toward these players that are very similar. You know, you took the money, go away, we don't care about you anymore. You withdrew yourself from professional golf. That's not going anywhere. If anything, that has hardened over the last year. Might not amplify, but it is hardened. It is metastasized to the point that it's hard to see even a path backward. And I know the players allude to this on the men's side all the time of how they're going to try and reconcile all of this someday. The infighting's got to stop. I don't know how that happens from a fan perspective really quickly, regardless of what happens, whether, again, lives here for 10, 20 years or they're done after this year. It's very hard to see that. And I think Anna Nordqvist got a sliver of that for taking a sponsorship from Aramco and knowing the implication of that. Said, you know what? I'm out of here. Thank you, but no thank you. This was an error. And we'll see what happens moving forward, whether more players get impacted by that personally and take that to heart, or you know, impacts their golf as a result of maybe feeling a little bit different about who they're involved with. We shall see. That's going to do it for us today on 2 of the First. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thank you for watching or listening to the show. Hopefully you can give us a 5-star review if you listen to us via podcast platform of your choice. Helps us reach more people. If you watch us on YouTube, smash that like and subscribe button. We appreciate it. We're always looking to talk to more people about golf by a fellow golf geek yourself. Tomorrow we will have a good idea of what the tee times look like heading into the first couple of days of the Genesis Invitational. We'll talk a little bit about what Tiger Woods just talked about in his news conference. We'll bring that up for tomorrow's show, and we'll have whatever else the day brings us. I'm sure some live stuff will come up as well. I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thank you for watching or listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow on 2 Off the First.